Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in each episode, my special guest and I will talk about local events, the topic of access in Cleveland, and sometimes we'll just talk about some cool people who are doing cool things in the greater Cleveland area. I'll introduce you to this week's guest right after this. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Shayna Black, and today I am joined with David and Samia. I'll let you guys actually introduce yourself and do your whole bio from the Black Environmental Leaders Association here in Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell us how you got started and tied in positions of Black Environmental Leaders Association.
So I guess I'll go ahead and start first. I was actually born into the environmental justice movement. I say that I am a granddaughter of the Great Migration from the South to the North, and I am a daughter of the Civil Rights Movement and the Environmental Justice Movement. And now I'm here today being one of those who are actually impacting the outcomes and how we make a better world that is just for all people.
Okay. And tell everybody your full name and what's your position. If you have a position here, or are you just
sure. Sure. So my name is Samia Bray, and I am a co-director of the Black Environmental Leaders Association. I serve along with David Wilson and in legacy of Jacqueline Gillen.
Okay. David?
Yes. My name is David Wilson. I am also a co-director along with Samia Bray and in legacy of Jacqueline Gillen with the Black Environmental Leaders Association. And my background, I grew up on the East Coast in Connecticut, product of the New England landscape, grew up really immersed in nature. My stepdad was a landscaper, so I got to do the landscape roots, cutting grass, and really, you know, working the earth from a very young age. I moved to the Midwest right after college and switched careers. And I was in Pittsburgh for about 8.5 years. And that's where I met my eventual wife, who grew up on the west side of Cleveland. And so after we had kids and I graduated from grad school with a master's in landscape architecture, we moved to Cleveland. And that's really where I found my niche in the environmental movement. And about 7 years ago, landed, no pun intended, with an organization called Land Studio, which manages public art and public space development projects in Cleveland. And it was kind of the perfect intersection between landscape and design. And, you know, and really the background that I brought to it was representation in the design profession, which was kind of really key for me, being a person of color in a predominantly white industry, and being able to bring a different perspective and a different voice to the table. And very soon after, that's where I met Jackie Gillen, who I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about, you know, was very much a mentor to me, to many, many others, through her work in not only environment, but in her work through the Neighborhood Leadership Institute. Just was able to make that connection to a much wider network of leaders in not only the natural environmental industry, but the built environmental industry as well. For me, it was kind of that perfect, what we call a marriage, that occurred in 2019. The conversation that I was part of, where it was parks and park equity and ensuring equitable access for communities that have been most impacted by negative environmental decisions that have happened over generations, with the leaders of color that typically just hadn't had that either invitation to be at those decision-making tables. So that conversation was going on at the same time. And then from there, we kind of joined forces and became the Black Environmental Leaders Association.
Very cool. So let's talk about why Black environmentalism, as opposed to just like, isn't it the environment? You know,
climate change is a thing, but when we talk about environmental racism, environmental justice, we're talking about more. Can we clarify that or kind of set the table of what we're talking about when we talk about Black environmentalism?
Yeah, so as Black people specifically, we have been a part of the environmental movement forever. It's ingrained in our culture very much.
Tell us more. How so?
Very much like the indigenous community or the Latinx community or even the Asian American Pacific Islander community, that for Black people, the environment has been very much a part of our existence. It's a part of our dance. When you think about African dance, shoes off, close to the ground. When you think about people who were enslaved and as they moved from their native country and they were being brought to various places within a diaspora, people would braid seeds into their hair so that no matter where they landed, they know they could survive. They didn't know where they were going. They didn't know why they were being taken, but yet they could survive wherever they were. When we think about things like the water, my grandfather was a diviner. He could walk across land and he could identify where water was for digging for wells. And so we have a very rich tradition in the natural and the built environment. When you think about how many of the things that were invented, even though our history books don't show that it was people of color who actually invented them, many times people were inventing because of a need for things to be not as hard. The ownership of that went to, I'll just say it, the person that owned them. So mm-hmm. let's just think about that for a minute. Another right. human being owning another human being.
Right.
So even though somebody else may have designed it, the history books tell us that it was the owner who actually created it. And so for both the built and the natural environment, we have a very rich heritage. And one of the phrases that we use is that we have been here. And the reason we say Black Environmental Leaders Association is because there are lots of Black environmental leaders. Lots of leaders.
Mm-hmm.
We happen to be an association of those leaders who choose to come together to work together.
So let's fast forward. So we talked about the historical perspective. You know, what is the role we play now? Like, we're not putting seeds in our hair now. Like, we have the crops, but what is our role or what is our fight look like today?
So I would say, first of all, does it have to be a fight?
Right.
I personally subscribe to, if I'm fighting, then someone else is deciding the narrative and I'm responding to their narrative. I would rather put on the table for consideration, how do we live our lives on purpose? That is a purpose of the richness of our culture and our heritage. And that's why I talk about the historical part. I hated history when I was in high school, you know.
And I think we all did.
And it was like, now why am I talking about history? Because that history did not represent me.
Correct.
And I knew that I didn't just show up somewhere, you know. Now that I'm understanding some of the injustices that happened, I use phrases like the ghost of redlining past, right?
Right.
When we look at the disparities within health, we look at all of the tree canopy, the high incidence of infant mortality, all of these statistics come in place, and it's the same communities. It's the same communities that were redlined. And even though the redlining is now illegal,
air quote,
the ghost of redlining past is still very much doing what it did when it was created. And so you ask, what can we do? First of all, we can begin to clear out, in my perspective, the distractions, right? If I get caught up in what this person is doing to me, this person is doing to me, this person is doing to me, then I'm focused on trying to attack what they're doing,
right?
Versus this is what it looks like for a healthy environment for me. So I'll give you some technical, some tactical examples. When I drive down the street sometimes, I will hear people say things like, it's a food desert and you know, it's nothing but fast food in my neighborhood. But at the same time, I will see people who will be in their vehicles and they will wait for 30, 40 minutes in line at said fast food restaurant to purchase food that has no nutrition or little nutritional value that their body can use.
Mm-hmm.
That same gas that they were burning, that same 40 minutes that they were sitting there, could have been used to get to healthy food.
Right.
But we've been socialized that what we're supposed to do is do this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a decision. I'm not saying that somebody didn't do wrong by that neighborhood by not having a grocery store there. That is absolutely not a decision that should have been made. However, I am saying that when we add on to that, that's a decision that right. we're making, because nobody is holding a gun to our head and telling us to sit in a line
right.
40 minutes in a parking lot waiting to get to a drive-through. That's a choice that we're making.
Well, to add on to that, I actually was a big fan of history growing up because I think so much of history is connections and what connects us to the past. You know, in the decisions that were made in the past, you could, on a timeline, see how they affect the present and how they perhaps even influence thinking that happens in the future. And so for me, a lot of what Samia said that really resonated, it's not only that piece of understanding where you came from, but it's also how are we redefining the narrative for an ever-changing society and humanity today. Yeah, I mean, when we talk about, you know, the fight, the environmental fight, mm-hmm. it pits people against people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We are very intentional when we talk about our shared humanity, that in order to address generational issues that we are seeing today in the form of climate change, in the form of racism, in the form of many of those decisions that Samia mentioned, like redlining, Jim Crow, you could go on a long enough timeline, go back to see decisions that were made that impacted bottom line today or then, that pit people against people. And so we this year, and really through our mission and our value proposition of what we call AI Square, being advocate, incubate, and inform, we see this as a model of bringing contextualized information to people that normally don't have access to that information, but then they could see themselves as more than just a data point, that this becomes a very real conversation and real people that are being impacted by, again, by generations of these negative impacts. So, you know, it is about kind of rethinking how we talk to each other, but it's also rethinking how we see each other mm-hmm. in this thing that is called that has become known as environmental justice.
Okay. Yeah. And so I think, you know, like I will say for my personal journey, I had to like find out what was environmental justice. Like I had to find like, what is that? And when I think of the environment, I think of like the stereotypical nature, save the trees, which is, you know, we want to save the trees, but like
that's part of
save
it.
The trees. I remember back in the, when I was a kid, it was all about acid rain. Just, you know, like
smog.
The smog uh-huh. and the ozone layer.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't about food access. Even if it was about food, it was about the farmers and, you know, are their farms going to be okay because of the rain? But
right.
for us, it seems like environmental justice or this conversation about the environment is our lived environment.
It is that, yes. all of that. And it is also the trauma that lives in spaces.
Right.
That is a part of the environmental movement as well. You know, we talk about things like lead poisoning, mm-hmm. right? If there's lead within my home and now it has impacted the child's ability or the adult's ability to develop within that home, now we're talking about the justice system that was built as a new form in some ways to keep people housed who don't follow the rules.
Right.
So then that reinforces for others, just stay in your place, which now moves over to the health system. So now somebody wants to ask a question to that doctor because what that doctor said doesn't sound quite right, but I've been socialized that you don't challenge authority.
Mm-hmm.
You just do what authority tells you. That our bodies have been freed, but our minds are not. And so some of the things that we talk about, some of the things that we say them purposely because I do want people to get angry sometimes. What do you mean? It's my decision. What do you mean?
Right.
They've done this to me. They've
right.
done that to me. I want somebody to get angry about that because in that anger, what they'll say is, because I know we are resilient people And anything we put our mind to, it gets done. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It gets done. However, we've been socialized and reminded over and over, stay in your place.
Or to be the victim.
Yes.
And be a victim. And so now if I'm a victim, me being a victim has then become a self-fulfilling prophecy, because mm-hmm. I will reinforce my victimization. And somebody says, well, I didn't do it. They did it to me. Yeah, the first time they did it to you. But every time you replay that scenario, every time you rebuild that, your body rebuilds and relives that trauma. Mm-hmm. And then you pass that trauma on through your family, and then it becomes all of this.
Right.
That's the root of the Willie Lynch,
mm-hmm.
right? Yes, there's a lot of injustice in this world. Yes, there are bad actors in this world. There are also a lot of people that re-perpetuate that. Right. And I'm not talking to the ones who are the bad actors, because they're right. doing it on purpose because right. they want to do it. I'm talking to the people who are reinforcing it and saying.
Right. Or speaking it onto the next generation. Right.
Speak it. You got to have this.
They're not going to let you.
I'm not going to let you get off better than what I got. You got to suffer like I suffer. Mm-hmm. Right. A friend of mine I was talking to, she said she had taken her shoes off because she likes to feel the earth on her feet. Mm-hmm. And she understands the healing properties of that. She said somebody stopped in front of her house and told her she better put her shoes back on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we perpetuate these things, and then we want to blame. So I say we are they and they are us.
Right.
Yeah.
And unless we make some different choices.
Yes. And, you know, just that statement about walking around barefoot outside, like, you know, oh, no, we don't do that. And I also think about, like, just touching the dirt. And you had told a story when you were talking to the cleanagers about how, especially up here in the north, like, we made it, and especially the more we get, I'll say suburbanized, maybe, like, don't be out in that dirt, don't do that, like, hit
don't
the book, like,
yet.
Don't, yeah, like, being in the dirt, I was gonna get yelled at, or don't get your nice clothes dirty, you know,
yeah.
And always have shoes on, don't be country. So there's many of us here who maybe never went to the south, and so we've gone up and taught our kids that, because somebody told us, like, I can't say I've walked outside barefoot. And I think I've probably told my own daughter, like, why are you outside barefoot? She loves to be barefoot. Like, you know, when I was younger, like, no, girl, put something on your feet, you know, and not knowing that.
Right.
So, like, I guess we should probably speak to that, because what is that healing property, or why should we go touch the ground?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think just to respond to what Samia said, you know, I think one of the main motivating factors why there is even a Black Environmental Leaders Association was in the beginning to create that safe space for not only celebrating our agency, but for healing, to talk about these very issues that, you know, normally there isn't a place to just come together and just be.
Right.
And not just in a meeting room. We were meeting at the Cleveland Lakefront Nature Preserve, which is an absolute gem. Mm-hmm. And I would venture to guess, I think most Clevelanders probably haven't even been there, because they're just
haven't been there.
Yeah. Well, there just so happens to be a divider, I-90.
Oh, okay.
That separates this beautiful natural amenity from the community. So it almost reinforces the
that
need.
Redlining and
yes,
everything. Access.
To reconnect to something that had been previously severed. You know, and when we come together, we have this practice of centering ourselves, centering our minds, our bodies. And we have members that can really speak to this, the powerful experience of being out in nature. And I'm just going to drop some names right now, but the Hoods, you know, Ebony, Erica, and Marcia Hood, they run an organization called SIAT, formerly See You at the Top, where they are engaging nature in the most elemental ways of going canoeing and skiing and scuba diving and snorkeling.
That's awesome.
They had me out in West Virginia snorkeling, no cell phone access. Tell you something, nobody else would have got me out there other than
Tina. I was like, was that terrifying?
You know what? Truthfully, it was. It was, because once I got off the highway, right, it was about an hour's drive to the location.
Mm.
And I was driving that hour, no cell phone reception.
Unnerved.
And the drive was beautiful. It was the scripting that yep. said, this isn't a safe place.
Yep. Right.
Something's wrong here. And so I was consistently reminding myself I'm okay.
Yes.
I'm fine. This is a beautiful drive. I couldn't turn off the scripting. So that's what I say. We all have that scripting. Yes. Right. I couldn't turn that off, but I could decide, what do I do with the scripting? Now, I could have said, oh my God, I'm so terrified. I'm turning around. I'm going back home. What was I terrified of? It was a beautiful drive.
Right.
There was no harm to me. I saw a whole bunch of signs that said some things that yes. made me yes. say, I wonder. But nothing was happening to me other than a beautiful drive in the woods.
Right.
And that's what I chose to focus on. Stay safe. Stay in my car. Enjoy this ride. And don't let those distractions give me a heart attack. That was my choice. Because that could have very easily turned into a turnaround, go back home. I'm too scared. I'm not doing this.
I can't be out here.
Right. It could have very easily turned into
that. I get that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I get that. I used to run a Girl Scout troop. Mm-hmm. And so we would have to go camping. And I could not handle. I remember the first night I left, like, if there's no street lights, I am like, where am I? Uh-huh. Like, out here. And we weren't far from Cleveland. And, you know, like, you have to be brave for the kids. But, like, I was terrified. But then, like, we started loving camping. And I would take high schoolers out to campgrounds, even just for a day, because you just, you haven't been out there. The kids, as a teacher, like, the kids aren't going to go far because they don't know where they're going. How often do you get to go out in nature?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's, like, zero light pollution. And it's, like, when you're in a space where you are truly just bathing in nature, in the beauty that is all the sounds and the smells and the stars.
Fresh air,
you know, but it's unfamiliar. And we fear that which is unfamiliar. So that doesn't make it not
no,
safe.
No, so let's kind of have, we're going to take this little left turn to have this conversation about that unfamiliarness.
Yeah.
Because I've heard people that are, I'll say, scared of the silence because of how their brain kicks in.
Yeah.
And I think, and this is my personal soapbox speech, that there are so many people that are so plugged in because they're afraid to let their brain just rest and be. And what if this thought comes, or, you know,
what if this feeling comes, this feeling that I've been repressing and repressing?
Yeah.
And repressing.
Or I'm just, like, they're just mentally running from, or just disconnecting.
Right.
I just often say that we understand that what we are talking about is not easy, because sometimes it's easier for me to say, they did this to me, they're bad, because I don't have any control over they, so I can always be their victim. Mm-hmm. When we turn inside and says, how do I exercise my agency in this situation? That becomes scary, because now there's ownership that I must take in my decisions. Just because somebody refuses to give you information doesn't mean you can't get the information.
Right.
We are resilient people. I've watched people turn nothing into something. I don't know about you all, but I've watched my mother take some pieces and parts out of a refrigerator and turn it into an amazing meal. We have that in us. All human beings have that in us.
Right.
It doesn't matter if somebody told you you didn't.
Right.
It doesn't matter if somebody told you you were stupid. It doesn't matter if somebody told you weren't worth anything.
Yes.
It only matters when you believe those lies.
Yes.
That's when it matters.
So you're having church in here and you're preaching and we can have this whole conversation. I mean, like, this can go into a whole path and conversation about just unfolding and healing.
Yes.
And I actually, on our last episode, we had someone who had written a book and she started talking about her healing journey and how she just kept going toward the red flags for the longest, because that's what life is. And that's what my example was. And then eventually it just, like, snapped her out of it. And so she started moving forward. But when I first met you, you had told this story. And I'll admit, like, I never realized it was an issue of environmental racism. And it was something, I believe, like Cincinnati with a shooting range.
Yes.
Yes.
Tell us that story. Tell us what that, like, how that's an environmental issue. How having a shooting range in Cincinnati is an environmental issue.
Absolutely. So the story that you're referencing is the community of Lincoln Heights, which is just outside of Cincinnati. And so we actually, we started to have conversations statewide through a series of virtual town halls that we call Black Landscapes Matter. And this started earlier in 2021, where that was our very first conversation that we had with Durance Daniels, who Durance Carlton, both leaders of the Heights movement, really just illustrated for us, illustrated and underscored what environmental justice means and is, and who embodies that. So the community of Lincoln Heights, as we are familiar with this story, predominant in this happened during the Great Migration. So as populations of African Americans were moving from the South to the North, and Samia, you know, her family legacy is very much part of that story. One of the first African American communities to incorporate in the state of Ohio happened in Lincoln Heights about 70, 75 years ago. The year after they filed for incorporation as a township, the adjacent city put a gun range right at the property line. So you can imagine 74 years.
And then they built a highway on the other side of the gun range so even though it was a different city, the gun range, there's the corporation line, then there's the gun range, and then there's a highway.
Oh, wow.
And so now all of the lead that comes from that gunfire from sunup to sundown, and this is every type of police, FBI, CIA, military are all using this gun range. So that means all the weapons that they use are being, so now you have families that from sunup to sundown, sometimes in the evening, if they're using weapons that you can fire at night, you're hearing gunfire.
Constantly.
Yes. All day long. That in itself is an environmental injustice. But then you also add to that the lead from the casings falling to the ground, soaking into the earth, ending up in the groundwater. Mm-hmm. Now that also adds to it. So now you have different responses. You've got that fear response that gets turned off. Mm-hmm. So now they hear pop, 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 and no response.
Right.
That's not healthy. Or you get terrified.
Right.
Or you get terrified.
Right.
So any sound is.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's at least three generations mm-hmm. that have lived with that. So let's talk about agency here for a second. This is a community of African Americans who went through all the hoops, all the loops, all that was required to actually form a city. Mm-hmm. They did it. And then the year later, that gun range was built. And as we speak right now, that gun range is still there. Wow. However, what they have done is now they are elected officials. Now they are in positions of authority. So now they can begin to impact the moving of that.
Okay.
And as it moves, what we are advocating for is don't put it in another community that's not organized.
Right, right.
Make sure it goes to a place where no one
has to do that.
Has to live through what these families have just lived through for 74 plus years.
Yes.
That's awful.
So that unfortunately is just one story. But again, we operate in a space of healing, and we operate in a space of celebrating our agency. So the Heights movement, they were able to really take their case nationally, being featured in national publications like The Atlantic and Slate. So there is an audience there that is now listening to what
and
they
watching.
Have to say and watching,
and we're amplifying, right?
Good. Yes.
So accountability is very much a big part of this story. Something that we know that when you know these decisions, when things are made in the dark, that inequity continues to be perpetuated,
right,
from room to room, generation to generation. So we have interviewed leaders in communities all over Ohio, not just Cincinnati, but also Columbus and Dayton and Youngstown, Warren, right here in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. We're planning on having conversations in Toledo and Sandusky. You know, these stories are unique to the communities that they're in, but they're not unique to the overall conversations that we've been hearing statewide and nationally. Okay. Another expression that we love to say, and it's a West African proverb, when spiders unite, you can take down a lion.
Yes.
We are finding that the connections that we are starting to make as an association go far and wide. And like I said, you know, before, it's in order to address these generational issues, it takes a generational approach, which, you know, what we call the Bell Effect. When we start talking about, you know, we're this association that is made up of leaders across the spectrum of humanity, people's eyes light right up and are like, how do we become a part of this?
Right.
And so that that is a conversation that we are excited about and are starting to see a lot more momentum toward, is that people are starting to see themselves in the conversation, which is very exciting. Not just dependent on the color of our skin, but you know, it cuts across age, it cuts across gender and sexual orientation and
ability,
absolutely. Right. And it's a conversation that is, we are trying to include as many people in as possible, and is starting to really resonate.
Good. So that's in Cincinnati. What do you think? We know the lead. We hear a lot about the lead crisis or issues here in Cleveland. Outside of the lead issues, what do you think is the biggest issue here impacting us here in Northeast Ohio?
Water would be a big one.
Meaning what?
Well, meaning that when we talk about lead, there's also the lead pipes and service lines that need to be replaced, updated. We have aging infrastructure that we see that, as we know, really the first communities that see that investment usually aren't the ones that are in the redline communities. And we hear the euphemisms all the time with disinvested communities, marginalized communities. You know, we know where the needs are. There doesn't have to be another study done on top of another study that's been done on top of another study. Now is really the time
to invest.
Communities.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Marsha Fudge, Secretary of HUD, was recently here in Cleveland along with other dignitaries, and they were announcing that the infrastructure bill has been passed, and that will be, we have the head of the EPA as well, and they announced that all of the lead service lines will be replaced, and that they will be replaced in those communities, those environmental justice communities. And so that excites me to see that the decision makers see
changes coming. Yes.
And they are making those commitments, not just lip service. The other thing that excites me is that I've heard funders begin to say, I'm not funding another plan. I'm not funding an update to a plan. I'm not planning. And don't get me wrong, I'm a consultant. I've done plenty of business plans and strategic plans. But I said, just like David just said, we know where the areas are. Mm-hmm. We've studied them. The people in these communities have trusted us with their story in the hopes that something would change in their lived environment. Not that we would get another PhD or book published, or, and all of those things are good. However, did the community that was interviewed, did anything change in their lived experience as a result of said publication or story or book or movie or whatever? If that could be the lens, I think environmental justice could be a thing of the past.
Yeah.
That's good.
Because there's so many people telling the story, and unfortunately far too many are telling it for their own benefit, mm-hmm. not the benefit
absolutely.
Of the communities.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
And I'm not, you know, I don't want nobody sending you bad tweets talking about, I'm saying people can't write books about community, because that's not what I'm saying.
No, and I stand with you on that. Like, I think we're exploiting people's stories.
Yes. Yeah. And that, you know, people trusted you. And that's why we talk about see the person, see the humanity, not the poverty porn.
Right.
See the person or the trauma. Oh, that poor person. No, don't nobody need you to feel sorry for them.
Let's follow them and see how bad their life is.
Let's see how bad their life is. You know, I was just watching a movie the other day, and I think about things sometimes. It was about these three young girls who were track stars, but they were homeless. They were homeless. All these people come in paying for their tickets to see these children run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they were homeless because their mother couldn't get a job that paid her more than minimum wage.
Right.
And then Tyler Perry stepped up and he gave them an apartment for 2 years. And the mother is talking about, so to your point, following around, asking, that's a part of environmental justice too, because the environment that a child grows up in will determine the rest of their life.
Right.
Right?
Right. So and I love this conversation. Like I said, for me, it's been a journey of understanding what environmental justice is. Like I said, I thought it was climate only, not necessarily the environment as I operate in it.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, like it's one thing to say, oh, wow, like the climate afar, like the ozone or, you know, energy, but
the rainforests.
Right. The rainforest. We've got to say, you know,
the polar bears,
The whales.
Right, the ice caps. Right. So that's, to me, that was like environment and then like justice or, and then again, pollution. But when we talk about it, like the homelessness or the food desert, it's not about the farmer that can't grow the soybean crop. It's about, can I access the grocery store?
Right.
And those are, that's where
The ADHD the changes. Comes from the lead.
Right.
ADHD or the mental illness that comes from the lead that turns into imprisonment.
Right. Or the trauma that we're continually dealing with, just trying to exist.
Yeah.
And so, you know, be it public transit access and like just your environment that you're operating in. And so I thank you for this and for coming, because that has helped me understand and also helped, I think, clarify for a lot of people, because, you know, when you hear the word environment, we picture the white person on a hike.
Right.
In Birkenstocks, maybe, your cute boots. And, you know, look at the beautiful sun, you know, like, but we don't think about, like you said, the homeless student, you know, that's eating hot Cheetos in 8 o'clock in the morning because that's the only food available.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so I thank you for clarifying that. And I want to shift, because I don't want to take up too much more of your time. And I think I have like two kind of thoughts here. One is the job situation. So I know that in part of this space, people talk about we need new jobs, clean energy jobs, all that into environment. Like, how does that fit into all of this?
Right.
So energy jobs, we've seen multiple waves, right? We saw the agricultural revolution. We saw the industrial revolution. We saw the tech revolution.
Right.
Right. And so we are on the cusp of another revolution, which is clean energy. I'm very excited about that because we're going back to nature within how we produce our energy, right? We've been using dead things, fossil fuels, to do it up until this point. And so now we're moving the sun and the water and the heat from the soil to bring our energy. That is creating jobs. However, our legacy policies are still poised to keep the same communities that we just talked about from yet again. So I say, in my mind, it's like, we keep seeing the pie go by. We can smell it go by. But don't dare think you're going to get a piece of it.
Right.
And then there are people who have excess on excess on excess. That's a zero-sum mindset. Mm-hmm. A zero-sum mindset says, mine is mine and yours is mine. Because you're not really a person.
Right.
We're going back to history, three-fifths of a person. So I don't care what happens in your community. I care. So I gave some money. You know, for
right, poor you, right?
For the poor people, but I really don't care. Don't talk to me, poor people, right?
Right.
Stay over there.
Stay over there in your poor community. However, the point that I want to get to is when we can begin to writ large see each other as all shades of community deserving clean air, clean water, and clean soil to grow our food in. And even if somebody doesn't see you as that, if you see you as deserving that, then you will take action to do what must be done. As long as he did what needed to be done, right?
Right.
We will do that. We will do that for things far less important.
Yes, that's true.
We will do that to get our nails done, our hair done,
the new tennis shoes,
done, our tennis shoes,
that new iPhone.
But when it comes to our health and our survival,
it's out of our hands.
It's out of my hands.
So I think that's a great segue into the question of, as a concerned citizen, many of us are taught that the only way to have change, which we've talked about, there's other ways, but the only way to have change is to vote, right? So is this a, what's the word, platform that we should be talking to our candidates about or our elected leaders about, or saying, hey, like, it's a different question on where do you stand on climate change. Should we be questioning our folks that want our vote about this?
Yeah. So there's really two things that give me hope when we talk about the change that is to come. And, you know, and we just talked about, you know, the future. So clean energy, harnessing energy that is very much renewable and not extractive, because that mindset has led us to where we are today, pulling resources not only from the earth, but from the very communities in which this energy is purported to be benefiting, but as we know is not, because it takes bodies and it takes earth for this, the current and the former energy economy to work. Really, you know, it's that clean future, but also it is those who are going to be leading us into the future. And I'm referring to our young folks out there, the cleanagers,
right?
Who we had the absolute good fortune to be interviewed by right here a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Their energy, their vision, really what, you know, and we could tell immediately that they are open to new ideas in ways, even like my generation, for instance. We kind of, you know, we kind of like, okay, you stay in your lane, you get a job, you have a pretty good life, and, you know.
We get comfortable.
We get comfortable, exactly. There is a hunger there.
Yes.
That we see, and we, Samia and I, have been fortunate enough where the Black Environmental Leaders Association has partnered with a dynamic youth organization, global organization, called the Global Shapers, and they have a hub right here in Cleveland. Okay. That are our young professionals ages 18 to 35.
Nice.
Really, their mindset is that we can't wait for another year, 10 years, and we can't let decision makers make those decisions. We need to act now, and we're the ones to do it.
Good.
So that right there, seeing that energy that is emerging from our young leaders, that excites me the most.
Yeah. And those, there are things, I don't know about you all, but there are things when I think about life that we would do for a young person that we would be too scared to do for ourselves.
Right.
But when we look in their eyes, we say, I can't. And it'll give us that courage to do it. And when we do it, we find out it really wasn't as hard as we thought it was.
Mm-hmm. And I think also they'll lead us. So like I think about, and I'll say I'm in my 40s. So I think about that cutting the soda can things for the ducks. Remember that whole campaign back in the day? And I remember one of my siblings like, Mom, no. Like, and because he was so adamant, like, it became a habit for her.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's one thing, like, we look at our children and we want to make sure that we leave the world better for our children and grandchildren. Which I also understand that some people don't think, like, back to that space, that they don't see that.
Right.
But our children are demanding that.
Yes.
And I think, you know, when your children, younger kids, even younger than the teenagers, like middle schoolers and stuff, are like, hey, we need to care about global warming. We need to care about this. We need to care about water, or bring home those random facts. I think that is the thing, you know, like kids can change upward as opposed to adults governing down.
Absolutely.
And I do, that's what I enjoy about working with the teenagers too, is just watching them process, seeing how they're going to change. Like, just, they're the ones to watch. Like, they make me feel old, because I'm like, I'm not the one to watch anymore. But, you know, just watching how they are such advocates for so many.
Yes.
Yeah.
What excites me is that they will be Lord willing, they will be the age that we are now.
Yes.
Day.
Yes.
And sometimes I look at them and I marvel and I was like, wow, when I was 17 years old, I was not thinking about what you all are thinking about. And I look at the things that we're able to influence, you know, enlighten, right? Mm-hmm. And I just get excited. I'm like, wow, they're going to be able to do so much more.
Yeah. And I think I was taught that there was nothing I could do. Like, this is going to happen. There's going to be a hole in the ozone. Like these things are going to come. Right. The earth is getting old. So recycle.
Or get a bunker.
Yeah, but recycling was the only possible option to saving anything.
Right.
So, like, it was just kind of like, one day this acid rain will come and destroy you all. Good luck to you. You know, like,
exactly.
And that was it. And, like, get a bunker and just hope it works out
and
for
you.
And
now each one of us can decide incrementally to reduce our carbon footprint.
Right.
And if you don't know what that means, you can look it up, Google it. How do I reduce my carbon footprint?
Yes.
It's the choices that we
and
make.
Even just small steps.
Small
help.
Steps. Yep.
Yeah.
Because if all of us do it, it becomes a big step.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And that's I think, what we see, that understanding that the younger generation is getting now, is that, you know, they are more connected than I think we ever were mm-hmm. when we talk about technology. But they are processing things a lot faster than we are and understand the urgency a lot clearer than we do and are unapologetic.
Yes.
and are fierce about getting, you know, getting those results. And so I think about kind of going back to that, how we were taught
right.
to do things. We were always taught, respect your elders, you know,
wait
your
turn
in line. Exactly. Yes. You got to cut your teeth first.
I find funny about all those statements is the people who made those statements don't apply any of those rules to themselves.
No,
yes, exactly.
No, they don't. No. And it was, and they're still in the space that we'd still be waiting.
Right.
You know, yeah. Like, they're still holding those spaces.
Right. Like, how dare you get out of your space? Get back to where I told you to
be. And then when I'm ready to leave this space, then maybe you can have what's left. Right. But
after I get all the juice out of it.
Yeah. And then you can have the scraps. And so, you know, and so I love this Gen Z, Gen Alpha batch of kids because, you know, like, I'm 14 and I'm going to do this thing. And you're like, oh. Okay.
Yeah. You know? Why not? They don't have all the barriers that we have.
Yeah. And they have more resources just because they're younger people and they'll figure it out. They're, you know, so I do look forward to seeing what they do. But I also know that we, and when I say we, like my age folks and in between, we got to support them, and we can't just be like, well, good luck to your kids, which is what older generations would do. Like, you go do that over there.
Right.
But it's all of us that have to continue this.
Yeah. That's part of the reason that at Black Environmental Leaders Association, we really embrace the notion of distributed leadership mm-hmm. and intergenerational leadership. And that touches both of those, where distributed leadership means whoever is the most skilled for whatever it is that we're doing, that's who the leader is.
That's awesome.
That's the leader. Or whoever has the best understanding, that's who the leader is. It doesn't matter their age. It doesn't matter their gender. It doesn't matter. If we're looking at a situation, an environmental justice matter that we need to address, and you got it, we're like, okay, what do you need us to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we bring our gifts to that with them.
Yes.
That ties into the intergenerational leadership to say, just because somebody biologically has only been on this earth a few years, I know some young people that are more mature than people three times their age. Some people grow up. Some people just grow old.
Mm-hmm.
To stop that leadership just because of the number of chronological days that somebody has been on this earth is a travesty.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's a travesty.
So let me ask you this as we wind down. Two final questions. Number one, how can people work with you, support you? Like, how do we get people involved with you? What can they do? And number two, the question that we always get at Black Girl is, do you have to be Black to join Black Environmental Leaders Association?
Well, I'll take the first one. Actually, I'll go in reverse. You just need to be breathing air, drinking water, enjoying, you know, the fruit of the earth mm-hmm. to be a part of this conversation. And then, you know, how to get in touch with us, you could visit our website. Go to blackenvironmentalleaders, all one word, .org. And we have various ways to get involved, to become a member of the association. You don't have to be Black. You can be who you are in this conversation. We have memberships for Black Indigenous people of color. We also have memberships for allies in this space. Like I mentioned, it takes all of us,
right,
to be in this conversation. So there's various levels of membership and in being involved. We're also on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we have a YouTube channel. So there's multiple ways that people could be in touch and get that Bell Effect.
Perfect. And we'll put those links in the show notes and on the website so people can find you.
Absolutely. Please do.
Of course. So is there, before we go, final thoughts. Is there anything that I didn't ask or like, look, we got to talk about this before we go. Like, the floor is yours.
I would say the peace and ease, right? Just wanting to let the people know that when we greet people and as we prepare to leave, we say we greet you with peace and ease. And as we leave with peace and ease. That is not lollipops and rainbows and unicorns. That is looking at the very real issues of today, understanding them for the issues that they are, and then using that as fuel to move post-haste to the solution. So as if you would imagine yourself understanding that you are on a boat and you were going down a river, and everything that you needed was right there on the shore for you to just reach out and access it. That is peace and ease. Because our answers are before us. When we started this journey a few years ago, we had no idea so many people would need it and so many people would appreciate it, so that it now is called the Bell Effect. But what we did is we chose to live on purpose, not by accident, not just because somebody told us we're supposed to, but because it is in our purpose. And when you walk in your purpose, peace and ease lives with you. Sometimes it will scare you. Because it will happen so easily. It'll happen so easily that it will feel like something's wrong with it.
Mm.
But everything in nature moves like that. Nature wastes nothing. Everything in nature moves with peace and ease. And when we align our lives to that, we will find ourselves being just that much more effective and efficient. It will scare us and it will mystify others.
Mm-hmm.
So we greeted you with peace and ease. And you want to say it, David?
We leave you with peace and ease.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for listening. My guests today were Samia Bray and David Wilson from the Black Environmental Leaders Association. Tune in next time, and thanks for listening. See ya. Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. Please check us out online at www.blackgirlincle.com and like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at blackgirlincle. This podcast was recorded in Cleveland, Ohio, with post-production by the talented interns at Black Girl Media. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved and retained by Black Girl Media, LLC. Talk to you next time.